about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there.
Our brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart. You don't have any idea why
we're
doing
so smart
most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal. It is sort of interesting to think how much being in the presence of other people affects how we feel. I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Art Markman.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy. And this is Two Guys on Your Head. Today, emotional contagion.
How do you actually understand what somebody else is experiencing? And really, part of the way that you do that is by trying to mimic or simulate what you might be experiencing if you were doing the outward things that someone else is doing. So if you see somebody hunched over and they're talking like this, then you may be trying to simulate for yourself, well, under what circumstances would I be slumped over and sounding like that? Maybe, you know, you run that little simulation internally and it's, oh, I guess because I'd be feeling pretty sad. And of course, part of the consequence of running that little simulation is that you yourself actually get a little bit sadder. And this is, of course, a very important element of things like movies and stories, because we use movies and stories to create these emotions as well. Because you're trying to understand what's being said, you end up experiencing those emotions.
Yeah.
And then one other piece, which is we're trying to predict what's going to happen in the future. Part of the way that you predict what's going to happen next, partly it's by simulating what you might do in that situation, and partly it's by remembering things that happened in similar situations. And because your memory retrieval is influenced by how you're feeling at that moment, if you put yourself in the same emotional state as somebody else, it actually makes it easier for you to predict what they're going to do next. And so you become more effective in that situation because you do a better job of prediction if you end up matching the emotional state of the people you're with.
Yeah, and I think most people, most of us have experienced people who we like being around them because they make us feel better, not because of what they say to us necessarily or because they're complimentary of anything, but just their emotional state sort of brings us up a little bit. And conversely, there are people who just the opposite is true, right? But one of the things that's interesting is to think about what are the channels of communication that convey this. And one of the things that we know is an outward signal of emotionality is pupil size. We know that when we're in an emotionally aroused state, our pupils tend to dilate. It's been demonstrated now, and there was a recent study that we were just looking at a little while ago, where when people see other people whose pupils are dilated, their pupils tend to dilate a little bit too in response to that, again, without any conscious awareness on anybody's part. But I think an interesting study that sort of illustrates the primitive nature of this is you can create the same dots in infants, right, who will respond with pupil dilation that matches the pupil dilation of the people they're interacting with, by holding up black circles that are the size of pupils that aren't attached to people at all. As a control, which I thought was a very elegant and clever way to do this, they compared black circles and its effect on the dilation of the pupils of infants with similar-sized black squares, which didn't have any effect at all. But the circles that looked like pupils, they had an effect that was very similar to what you would see with a real person. So again, we're talking about very primitive responses that you can see would have an evolutionary advantage because the more we understand and the people that we're around, and as Art's saying, sort of simulating what someone else might be feeling or thinking like, allows us to understand more about what somebody's feeling and thinking and might be doing, you can see why those responses would evolve over time.
And this emotional contagion plays a big role in that, because a lot of times when we miscommunicate with people over the phone or in situations like that, it's because we misread some of the emotion that was behind the sentiment.
Yeah.
And when you misunderstand that emotion, the conversation can really run off.
And you know, the ideas about conveying emotion to the people we're around and the fact that that can happen without any intentionality on our part has implications for how, for example, our children learn to interact with other people, right? If I'm walking down the street and I'm holding my child's hand and someone's coming the other way who, for whatever reason, makes me anxious and I squeeze my child's hand quite unconsciously, that's just my reaction because I'm feeling protective and I squeeze your hand a little bit. I mean, I'm conveying something to my child about that person that may be completely out of whack and off kilter, except now there's some anxiety paired with. And you can imagine if you play that out to people who share common characteristics, whatever those happen to be, they're poor, they're from a particular ethnicity or whatever. I mean, you can see how someone can develop a feeling toward other individuals, have no idea where that feeling came from. You know, no one taught that purposefully. No one said, I'm intending you for you to have this idea and this feeling. But yet, because we're so good at picking up the emotions of other people and actually feeling the emotions of the people that we're around, we can often convey attitudes without our even being aware that we're doing that.
And that's one of the reasons why the study that Bob was talking about with the, you know, infants reacting to pupil size is so important, because what, you know, human infants can't come equipped with a huge number of responses because the species basically has to be able to survive in whatever information landscape it finds itself in. And so there are a lot of the responses we have are ones that allow us to be directed towards information that is likely to help us to learn to navigate the world. Mm-hmm. And so by paying attention to simple things like aspects of physiology that tell us whether we should be calm or aroused, for example, mm-hmm. Helps an infant to begin to learn how to react to the situations around it at a time when it's pre-verbal, right? So it's able to learn a lot about navigating the world just by being able to read certain simple elements of that emotional experience. And so that's, you know, that enables us to transmit a tremendous amount of information. And it's not a skill we lose. We continue to do this throughout the lifespan.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll explore the psychology of hearing loss with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke. You can subscribe to the podcast of Two Guys on Your Head on iTunes, in Stitcher, or on SoundCloud, and leave us a review while you're there. We'd love to know what you think of the show. David Alvarez is our engineer, and I'm Rebecca McEnroe. I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.